Welcome. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society, where we attempt to be welcoming of everyone, no matter where they are on their spiritual or faith or religious journey. And no matter the color of your skin, no matter your background, no matter your gender preferences, you are welcome here. And as we always say, or try to remember to say, if this is one of your first times here, please think about coming back more than once, because our services can be very different from week to week, but they're always spectacular, of course. Sometimes they're done by myself, sometimes they're done by outside the congregation folks, and sometimes our people within the congregation do the service. It is my great pleasure, although I didn't do any of the work involved in getting to this point, to announce that we have a new director of religious education. But she's not here this morning. She really wanted to be here, but she has company from out of town. She did help, I believe, yesterday with the cleanup downstairs in the work day. And her name is Holly. Begins with a T.
Calendar,
I believe. So you will be seeing this person. We'll introduce her again when she's actually here, but we are very, very fortunate. I think she's the perfect match for Prairie right now. She has so much energy and enthusiasm and great ideas, and we've just been really fortunate with our directors of religious education. Rebecca was what we needed. It was time for Rebecca to challenge herself and go on to a different program, and now there's Holly, so we are really happy about that. The opening words are these. Come into this place of peace and let its silence heal your spirit. Come into this place of memory and let its history warm your soul. If we needed more warming today. Come into this place of prophecy and power and let its vision change your heart. So the words of the Reverend William Scholes. We come to this time and this place to rediscover the wondrous gift of free religious community, to renew our faith in the holiness, goodness, and beauty of life, to reaffirm the way of the open mind and full heart, to rekindle the flame of memory and hope, and to reclaim the vision of an earth made fair with all her people one. Thanks, Rick. The reading I would like to share with you is a short reading by Reverend David Blanchard, and I don't read him every week, but it must seem like that to some of those of you who know him. This is titled, No Place Like Home. He writes, if a perfect church existed, and I have it on good authority that one has yet to develop, I think it would resemble something like the perfect home. Another institution that lives more in our imaginations than in practice. There are obvious differences, of course. One usually joins a family by no choice of one's own. At home, members may receive an allowance. At church, it works the other way around. At home, unlike at church, the leaders actually have some power to enforce their authority, even if it's only because they are bigger or older. Yet we persist in speaking about being at home in church. This is what this ideal means to me, Blanchard says. I hope this home will be a place of shelter, a refuge from the tumult of life's disappointments and defeats, a place of consolation and encouragement. I hope this home will be a place of challenge, not complacency. A space where we are helped to mature and take on a wider sense of responsibility for ourselves and others. I hope this home will be a place where we can be ourselves, unencumbered by judgments or ridicule, where we are accepted as we are, where we are, and for whom we are. I hope this home will be a place we might take some risks, knowing that there will be arms to catch us if we fall. I hope we will know this home as a place of love, where life is made whole, where we may become engaged at the deepest levels of being alive. If we give these hopes life, concludes Blanchard, if we give these hopes life among us, in the community that is found at church, then there will be no place quite like it, and we will know that we are home. So here we are, gathered together again to do what? Worship? Whoa, there's a word that can push buttons. I'll have more to say about that in a few minutes. We have come here, we have gathered together to do many things. Hopefully to do all those things that I mentioned in those opening words. Come into this place of peace. And let its silence heal your spirit. Come into this place of memory and let its history warm your soul. Come into this place of prophecy and power and let its vision change your heart. Are we here to make a home? The kind of home, though it be imperfect, the kind of home that might still be the sort of place which Unitarian Universalist David Blanchard described in No Place Like Home? Yes, I think that we are here to make such a home. But I believe that we are here to go even deeper than home making. One of my favorite hymns, number 389, comes to mind when I think about why we gather. Why we come here Sunday after Sunday. Gathered here in the mystery of the hour, gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power, Spirit, draw near. What spirit is being invoked in this song? Is the word spirit a word that we are comfortable using? Giraffes can't dance, and sometimes Unitarian Universalists can't speak, or at least can't or won't use certain words. We are like the giraffes in the story for all ages. All of us Unitarian Universalists, free thinkers, religious, liberal folks, we are the giraffes, searching for meaning and connection and wholeness outside of the traditional religious framework, beyond what some would call acceptable religious behavior. Sometimes we seekers still want or expect to keep something from our first best religious awakenings, impulses, understandings, insights. Sometimes we want to discard it all. Perhaps one of the most important unifying factors among us is that we are different, and we celebrate that. At the same time, we are looking for music that we can all dance to comfortably. Last Sunday, I talked about so-called religious language, or more accurately, traditional religious language. I suggested that we Unitarian Universalists are conflicted about the use of certain words. We tend to do one of three things with words that give us pause, that perhaps push those buttons. One, we try never to use the word. Two, we might occasionally use it, but generally in a disparaging, negative, or sarcastic way. But three, we might define the word on our terms. And number three is what I want to focus on this morning. I got to the end of my remarks last week without actually getting to the end of what I wanted to say. But no, there is no end, really, when the conversation is about language, because language is always evolving, as is our religion, our faith tradition. There is a reason why we call it the living tradition, though that phrase may seem to be an oxymoron. When working on last week's service, I originally intended to follow up this Sunday, today, with a consideration of the word worship. Then, the very next evening, Monday, I went to the monthly meeting of our program committee. Now, we start these meetings with a review of the Sunday services that have taken place since our last meeting. When we got to the August 17th service, last Sunday's, one of the program committee members said the discussion of language was okay, and probably paraphrasing here, as long as you don't try to tell me, this is a direct quote, I believe, as long as you don't try to tell me that what we do here on Sunday morning is worship. Uh-oh. There went all those plans for a relatively easy week when it came to writing something. I told that person that that is exactly what I was planning. I think that person might have thought I was joking. I wasn't. That doesn't mean that I have abandoned the idea of talking about worship, but it won't be happening this morning, exactly. If you looked at the last two pages of my reflections from last week, you would see a lot of scribbling and on the supposedly final copy, and crossing out and adding to. In other words, you would see a mess. Because much to my surprise in last week's reflections, I reached a conclusion that I did not expect to reach. And apparently some of you were surprised too, that I ended up where I did last week, so much so that it has been suggested that we start, by more than one person, a discussion group to talk about religious or sacred language. And maybe that would lead to other topics, such as forming a building your own theology group. I've been told that I am definitely invited to be a part of this discussion group should it take place, but I will not be the leader. It's fine with me, I like to listen. Well, where did I end up last week, for those of you who weren't here? With this statement, which I then said is a radical thought from a humanist minister for the humanist congregation she serves. I maintain that the foundation of any faith community, this is a faith community, any community like this one, including ours, the foundation of any such community is religion. I believe that when you get right down to it, we are a religious organization. In making that statement, though, I don't mean religious or religion in the traditional sense. If I did, then our atheist and agnostic, and probably many of our humanist members might not want to be here, and we want them here. So don't worry, I'm not going to start sprinkling my reflections with all sorts of religious language, nor attempt to speak in tongues, but there are words that I would like to use, and I'll get to them in just a moment. This is not an original thought, the possibility that we are a religious organization. I'm not the only Unitarian Universalist minister by any means who has reached this conclusion. As I said last Sunday, I was influenced by a book titled God Revised: How Religion Must Evolve in a Scientific Age, written by Galen Gungerich, senior minister at the Unitarian Church of All Souls in Manhattan. And here is the paragraph of his that reached out and grabbed me, so to speak, that succinctly states what I believe about what it is that we do here. He writes, "No matter how difficult our circumstances or how dire our situation, we need a way to pull everything together and celebrate wholeness. We need to affirm what is true, cherish what is beautiful, and embrace what is lovely. The necessity of religion emerges from this deep-seated and long-standing human need for connection and wholeness. This is what I mean when I use the words religion and religious. I am referring to that deep-seated and long-standing need, and I might add universal, for connection and wholeness. That paragraph speaks to many things for me, but it speaks to a concern that I have wrestled with since I became a Unitarian Universalist minister over 15 years ago. Do we have depth, width, breadth enough as Unitarian Universalists to be a match for life's tragedies and traumas? Are we strong enough to confront life's hard questions, to be tough enough to battle life's senseless violence and oppressions? And believe me, if I had a dollar for every time someone told me that we do not, that we're a piece of fluff, that we are only a surface group, that we never go deep, that we only believe in putting a happy face on, there's no depth to us. If I had a dollar for every time I've heard that, well, I probably wouldn't be standing up here, I'd be traveling somewhere. We are the light religion. We have nothing under it. That's the perception out there. But Gungarich reminds us that church is where people should be able to feel comfort when they get into that dark night of the soul time. We should have, this is his quote, the consolation of faith and the solace of religious community. There was another piece to my conclusion about us being a religious organization, and I didn't explore it in any detail last week. I'll say just a little bit about it here. That piece concerns the difference between spirituality and religion. Gungarich says that if you take yourself seriously as a spiritual person, you'll eventually need to become religious. He goes on to ask this question: what is it that people don't want to be when they want to be spiritual but not religious? And he sees and hears this all the time. So do I. People telling us that they're spiritual but not religious. Gungarich argues that in religious terms, your spiritual experience, when added up over time, would be yours alone, and yours alone, and yours alone, and yours alone. There's nothing that ties it together. Well, so much for community building and for being really connected to each other. Gungarich does acknowledge what I think most of us would acknowledge. This is his quote again. Whatever people mean by being spiritual, and he's not trying to put that down, nor am I, whatever we mean by that, it's certainly understandable that thoughtful people wouldn't want to be religious. Some of you may have heard about the 1,000-pound alligator that was captured after being tortured and killed in Alabama. This 15-foot alligator was shot in the head after having several large hooks stuck in it by a family of alligator hunters. And I don't know if this would be relevant to you, but just so you know, you have to take a training class in Alabama to become an alligator hunter. At the end of this questionable adventure, one of the hunters said, "We give all the glory to God." What? I don't want any part of that God, nor of any religion that thinks God would condone torture of a living being just for the fun of it. Well, and of course, to set the state record. A couple of nights ago, okay, I'm gonna tell you something that maybe I don't want you to know. I do watch television occasionally. I know. Not just PBS. So, a couple of nights ago, I saw an episode of Bones. One that I had actually not seen. I am a huge fan of Bones. I don't know if any of you watch it. But when it is at its best, and this was true particularly in the early years of the series, it tackles fascinating theological questions. The mystery, the crime is kind of you know, not the main focus. Well, in this particular episode, Booth, husband of a woman named Bones, suggests that they start taking their daughter, Christina, to Sunday school. Forensic scientist Bones, a confirmed atheist, and this is clear from the very first episode, replies, and her husband is a, maybe not confirmed Catholic, but he's pretty Catholic, okay. Okay, so Bones replies when, you know, her husband suggests this, why? So she can learn about the Crusades and the Inquisition? Discussions continue throughout this episode, with Booth finally asking the on-staff psychologist whether or not he is religious. His reply, no, I'm more spiritual than religious. But you're watching this to relax, and I'm writing furiously. You know, I'm taking notes. This is like 2014. This is still so relevant. If this weren't relevant, we wouldn't be having all these discussions. So the psychologist says, no, I'm more spiritual than religious. You might tell Bones, though, that religion is good for your health. And then the psychologist goes on to cite all the statistics, which I'm sure most of us know, especially if meditation is really good for our health. And then the psychologist says, you just need to find one that fits with your need. Well, I kept waiting for mention of Unitarian Universalism. But this has happened on that show. There was an episode where they talked about Unitarianism in a very positive way. So I'm waiting for that, but that didn't happen. But in the end, Bones agrees with her husband. Christina will go to Sunday school. Why the change of heart? Her husband asks. Because, Bones replies, we can't make good decisions unless we're exposed to everything. Well, I'm sure that they will end up in a UU congregation. To be continued. But then there's this piece of information. A 2009 Harris poll found that Americans are more likely to believe in the virgin birth, that's 61% of the people polled, than they are to believe in evolution. 45% believe in that. But then, this isn't easy stuff. Consider this conclusion. It's not from a poll, but in his book, Restless Souls, The Making of American Spirituality from Emerson to Oprah, Princeton historian Lee Eric Schmidt points out that countless American churchgoers have rejected their inherited faith traditions and become what he calls spiritual seekers. These are the people that we need to be finding, reaching out to them and bringing them back to religion, except our religion, right? Our faith tradition. We need to be able to talk to these people about religion in a meaningful way. They may have rejected that word, but they have not rejected what underlies the use of that word. We need to be able to talk in a meaningful way to attract these seekers. Now, I am well aware of the fact that certain words can trigger bad memories for people, and using traditional religious language can bring up old wounds and hurts. I know that. It can remind us of all the bad things done in the name of religion. I'm also aware of the fact that trying to get rid of all traditional language can get just plain silly, and we talked about that a little bit last week, but there's someone here who needs to know, if she doesn't already, that recently a high school student in Tennessee was briefly suspended for saying bless you after another student sneezed. Now, I think perhaps the complete story of this, I don't think we have that yet. Last week I asked these questions. If we refuse to use words such as religion and reverence, and if we throw them out, will we grow? Because I heard this conversation a lot at General Assembly. I've heard it over the years. Will we attract more people? And I said this last week, especially young people, if we can just figure out the right words to use to get people into our buildings. No, I don't think so. We're diminished, I believe. Diminished both personally, and we diminish our very old faith tradition if we refuse to use such rich, complex, moving words as sacred, reverence, spiritual, awe-inspiring, faith, even the word God, as long as we're clear about what we mean by the word God. That means that we free thinkers must define the words on our terms. We need to make them relevant to to the 21st century. We must be very clear about what we mean when we use words. There are four words in particular that I hope we become comfortable using, not just comfortable, but more knowledgeable about using them in a rational way in this scientific age in which we live, in which more and more people are questioning the necessity for and usefulness of traditional religion. The first word is reverence, and I talked about it at some length last week. And I used some of Reverend Dr. Kendall Gibbons' stuff. Basically, she says that reverence has to be experienced, not told to us by someone else what reverence is supposed to be. And it can be, among other things, our response to nature, our reaction to stories of courageous people, who fought for justice and beauty, for an end to oppression, the stories that bring a lump into your throat, or, as she puts it, that whisper to your secret heart. This reverence has nothing to do with dogma or scripture or any one story from any one tradition. Well, if I can accept that reverent and reverence are beautiful, joyful, relevant words, then I can accept the wonderful definition of religious, that's my second word, which was written by one of the liberal women ministers who preached and ministered to congregations in the frontier, actually it was really the Midwest, we would call it that now, in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, and here is that definition of religious. Being religious means possessing a fundamental reverence for life. You could say that to be religious is to have faith, it's my third word, hard to say. Faith in what? Faith in that spirit among us when we gather together. Faith as hope, yes. How about this, though? This is a quote from Galen Gingrich. Faith requires a leap of the moral imagination to connect the world as it is to the world as it might become. That is far and away the best definition of faith I have ever come across. Leap of our imagination to connect the world as it is to the world as it might become. Again, if I had a dollar for every time, usually someone my age, often an ex-husband, says, "Are you still tilling at those windmills? Are you still trying to change things?" Yes, because I have faith. Amen, brother. After years of working for and on various social justice causes, here is a word that helps explain why we continue in that seemingly endless struggle of trying to mend a broken world. Faith. And Gingrich's words looks at what is and imagines what might be. It compels us to build a bridge from what is past to what is possible. At its best, faith is a commitment to live with the belief that life is a wondrous mystery, that love is divine, that we are responsible for the well-being of those around us. What better way to come in here and get re-energized to go out and fight for, end of oppression, to feed the homeless, goes on and on. And what holds faith up? My fourth word, religion. Religion supports this kind of faith. Religion provides a place to go, not only when we're feeling discouraged, also when we have victories, however small, to be celebrated. There are few words that capture the essence of the deep yearning humans feel for connection and wholeness. Reverence, faith, religious, religion do that. Maybe we just haven't gone deep enough before or ask the right questions. By we, I do mean Prairie, the Prairie community, but I also mean Unitarian Universalism as a whole. Maybe we haven't gone deep enough or asked the right questions about language and which words are acceptable to and for Unitarian Universalists. Maybe the real question is, what do we expect or want from our experience at Prairie or in any UU congregation? Which brings me back to that necessity of religion emerges from our deep-seated and long-standing human need for connection and wholeness. So if we're not going to call what happens here faith, and religion, then what words might we use instead? I'm sure you're all coming to the discussion group to find out. One more Gingrich quote. In order to flourish, the tradition, our tradition, our UU tradition, must provide its adherents with a way of living that is transformative, meaningful, and satisfying. Is what we do here at Prairie transformative, meaningful, and satisfying to you? How can it be more so? Our president, the president of the congregation, Gary Gates, challenged you to get together, different discussion group now, about and talk about our mission and our vision. What's our vision? Is it just to be comfortable in this room? Perhaps it is time to move out of our comfort zone. There is no such thing as religion in general. There are only particular religions, philosopher George Santayana maintains. Our faith tradition has a long history of being relevant to the times in which it finds itself. Alan de Botton, in his book, Religion for Atheists, A Non-Believer's Guide to the Uses of Religion, says that, or Gingrich says about him, about de Botton, that he is fixated on one particular view of God and religion, and it is that Western view where God makes the rules, you know, somewhere up there, hands them down to humans as divine scripture. But that's out of date. No wonder people are seeking. De Botton wrote his book was published in 2012. We have a lot of work to do. And this is where I think the Sunday Assembly folks have it all wrong. Gingrich says religion is the process of taking everything we know into account as we forge a life of meaning and purpose. I don't hear any God language here. I don't hear any reference to a supernatural being. And we, Unitarian Universalists, are in a really unique position to do this, to take everything we know into account to create a life of meaning and purpose, because that's what we've done for our entire histories. Come, let us gather to what? To make a home, yes, but to go deeper than that, to get beyond our fear of or our disdain for words that not only enable us to communicate with the seekers who are out there looking for us, but also are capable of enriching and expanding our individual experiences of the mystery that we call life. Giraffes can't dance? Can't use certain words? Yes, they can, and yes, we can. We can use language to shape our religious faith, to figure out what it means to be human. We've boogied, tangoed, rock and rolled with other religions in the process of finding the music that fits us best, that makes us not only who we are, but places us right here in this century, in time and space. Remember, ours is the living tradition, and we must be willing to risk to keep it that way. If here you have found freedom, take it with you into the world. If you have found comfort, go and share it with others. If you have dreamed dreams, help one another that they may come true. If you have known love, I have no idea what you're supposed to do. But I can tell you. Apparently I didn't print the last page. This is number 692. You would think after all those words I would know what to tell you if you had found love. Oh, if you have known love, give some back to a bruised and hurting world. Go in peace.